Blog Talk Radio.
This is our common ground, alternative activists empowerment talk radio, speaking truth to power and ourselves.
Who are you? You don't know. Don't tell me Negro, that's nothing. What were you before the white man named you a Negro? And where were you? And what did you have? What was yours? What language did you speak then?
I am a revolutionary.
Let's speak about what we didn't do.
Amen.
Then it speaks to us and the possibility for us as a future person. Because ultimately, our people's future resides on what we do outside of the White House.
African descent family, America failed. She put them in chains. The government put them on slave quarters, put them on auction blocks, put them in cotton fields, put them in inferior schools, put them in substandard housing, put them in scientific experiments, put them in the lowest paying jobs, put them outside the equal protection of the law, kept them out of their racist bastions of higher education, and locked them into positions of hopelessness and helplessness. The government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a three-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America. God...
Our Common Ground with Janice Graham.
Our Common Ground, speaking truth to power and ourselves. Our Common Ground, a higher ground for discourse, discussion, solutions, and ideas.
I'm Janice Graham, and I'll be listening for you.
Talk
that matters.
Transforming truth to power. One broadcast at a time.
And now to Our Common Ground with Janice Graham.
Did not suffer and die to give me an education to slight, oppress, or discourage my people. Because whatsoever education I acquired out of their sacrifice of over 300 years, I shall use for the salvation of the 400 million black people of the world. And the day when I forsake my people, may God Almighty say there shall be no more life for you. I unequivocally rejected the racist assumption of much white American Christianity, namely that God had created the black man inferior and that he had intended Negroes to be a servant class, hewers of wood and drawers of water. Well, I predicated my view of man on the doctrine of Imago Dei. All men, regardless of color, are created in the image of God. Now, from this premise followed equality of all men and the brotherhood of all men. The biblical injunction of Acts 17:26 reminds us that he created of one blood all nations of men that dwell on the face of the earth. I was most interested in brotherhood within his own race. Because if Negroes are created in God's image and Negroes are black, then God must in some sense be black. If the white man has the idea of a white God, let him worship his God as he desires. We have found a new ideal. Because whilst our God has no color, and yet it is human to see everything through one's own spectacles, and since the white people have seen their God through their white spectacles, we have only now started to see our God through our own spectacles. But we believe in the God of Ethiopia, the everlasting God, God of Father, God of Son, God of Holy Ghost, the one God of all ages. That is the God in whom we believe, but we shall worship him through the spectacles of Ethiopia. For 250 years, we have struggled under the burden and rigors of slavery. We were maimed, we were brutalized, we were ravaged in every way. We are men. We have hopes, we have passions, we have feelings, we have desires just like any other race. The cry is raised all over the world of Canada for the Canadians, of America for the Americans, of England for the English, of France for the French, of Germany for the Germans. Do you take it unreasonably that we, the blacks of the world, should raise the cry of Africa for the Africans? Yeah. The Negro is a man. We represent a new Negro. His back is not yet against the wall. We do not want his back against the wall because that would be a peculiar and desperate position. We do not want him there. It is because of this that we are asking for fair compromise. Where the Belgians have control of the Belgian Congo, which they cannot use, they have not the resources to develop, nor the intelligence. The French have more territory than they can develop. There are certain parts of Africa in which they cannot live at all. So it is for you to come together and give us a United States of Africa.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
We are not going to be arrested without a country. God never intended it, and we are not going to abuse God's confidence in us as men. We are men, human beings, capable of the same acts as any other race, possessing under fair circumstances the same intelligence as any other race. Now, Africa's been sleeping, not dead, only sleeping. Today, Africa's walking around not only on her feet, but on her brains. You can enslave us, was done for 300 years, the bodies of men. You can shackle the hands of men. You can shackle the feet of men. You can imprison the bodies of men. But you cannot shackle or imprison the minds of men. Dive down, black men, and dig. Reach up, black men and women, and pull all nature's knowledge to you. Turn ye around and make a conquest of everything north and south, east and west. And then when you have wrought well, you will have merited God's blessing. You will have become God's chosen people. And naturally you will become leaders of the world. And as you bow down to the white man today, so will other races bow down to you and call you a race of masters because of the superiority of your mind and your achievements. Because no race has the last word on culture and on civilization. They do not know what we are capable of. They do not know what we are thinking. They're thinking in terms of dreadnoughts, battleships, aeroplanes, submarines. You know what we're thinking about? That is our own private business. So give us credit for being able to use our minds. And with people becoming conscious of themselves, determined to use their minds, you do not know to what extent they can go. Liberate the minds of men, and ultimately you will liberate the bodies of men. We love the white race, not for social fellowship, but for the common brotherhood of God intended we should live. What satisfaction can anyone get in being happy and see his brother wallowing in filth, dirt, and disease? How can you be happy living in luxury and your brother's living in disease, and then when you try to help the one out of the disease, the subtle culprit talks about disloyalty? Black men of Carthage, black men of Ethiopia, of Timbuktu, of Alexandria, gave the light of civilization to this world. Ethiopia shall stretch forth her hands unto God, and princes shall come out of Egypt. The classes, nations, races have been quite quiet for over four centuries. Who has merely borne abuse, insult, humiliation? Whose forbearance can only be compared to the prophet Job, has likewise lifted his bowed head and raised it up to God's skies and cried out, I am a man, and demand a man's chance and a man's treatment in this world. But I shall teach the black man, to see beauty in his own kind and stop bleating his skin and otherwise looking like what he's not. Back in the days of slavery, race mixture, miscegenation had occurred because the African woman had no protection from the slave master. Therefore, there is no need today for black people to themselves freely continue a practice that smacks so much of slavery. Our critics say that the race problem will be solved through higher education, through better education, than black and white will come together. That day will never happen until Africa is redeemed. Because if those who like W.E.B. Du Bois believe that the race problem will be solved in America through higher education, they will walk between now and eternity and never see the problem solved. God made man lord of his creation, gave him possession and ownership of the world. And you have been so darned lazy that you have allowed the other fellow to run away with the whole world, and now he's bluffing you and telling you that the world belongs to him and that you have no part in it. I don't have to apologize to anybody for being black, because God Almighty knew exactly what he was doing when he made me black. If black people knew their glorious past, then they would be more inclined to respect themselves. Yes, you heard of Johnny Walker Red and black. Well, he had his adversities, but he's still going strong. Well, I intend with your help and God's grace to continue. Because my work has only just begun. And future generations shall have in their hands the guide by which they shall know the sins of the 20th century. I know, and I know you too believe in time, but we shall wait patiently for 200 years if need be to face our enemies through our prosperity. When my enemies are satisfied, in life I shall come back, or in death even to serve you as I served before. In life I shall be the same, in death I shall be a terror to the soul of the Then count on me to be the real Marcus Garvey I would like to be. If I may come in an earthquake or a plague or a pestilence or as God would have me, then be assured that I shall never desert you and make your enemies triumph over you. Will I not go to hell a million times for you? If I die in Atlanta, my work will only just then begin. For I shall live in the physical or the spiritual to see the day of Africa's glory.
Good evening and thank you for being with us. You're tuned in to Our Common Ground, and I'm Janice Graham. And tonight at Our Common Ground, we're going to be meeting in deep waters with our sister, Afia Wangaza. She is a lifelong civil human rights activist and freedom fighter who first worked for the liberation of African black people as a child in her Garveyite parents' apostolic faith church in her hometown of Norfolk, Virginia. And we certainly are so pleased to have attorney Wangaza with us. She is a human rights, civil rights, black liberation warrior. She is a broadcaster and a media leader in the state of South Carolina, and we are just really so pleased to have her join us tonight in conversation, and we'll ask you to join in that conversation later in the broadcast. We led off tonight with a speech by the Honorable Marcus Garvey, not only to flag you about the ideology and the liberation spirit of our guests, but to ask you if you can find yourself in the whirlwind. And what does that mean? It means that we have, as I'm always saying to you, we have been here before. This has happened before. What you see before you has happened before. And we have to prevail, not only for our own families, but for our future and in honor of our ancestors. This week saw us saying goodbye to one of the giants of world history. Yes, Madiba, Nelson Mandela, is a giant in history, a one-of-a-kind person who came among us and struck the anvil. And we said goodbye to him, and our Common Ground voice, George Curry, and I have been talking this week from Soweto. He is still there representing the African American press and is doing some wonderful things to gather information that is relevant to us about where the South African people are, what the problems are, and the facts around what has happened in South Africa in the last 20 years. And we're going to have him back in January to talk with us about that. For those of you who are listening and you'd like to listen over your smart device, your cell phone, our number is 347-838-9852. You can join us in that way. And others who would like to join in our chat room for this discussion, you can come to blogtalkradio.com/OCG to join with those who are pretty active in talking with each other about the broadcast. But we do thank you for coming. We want to remind you that next Saturday here at Our Common Ground is our annual Kwanzaa teach-in. And joining us will be Dr. Matthew V. Johnson, Alpha of the Alpha Show, Blanche Williams of Blanche, who will begin her broadcast at TruthWorks Network on December 30th, Dr. Wilma Leon, professor of political science at Howard University and host of Inside the Issues with Dr. Leon on Sirius Radio. And we'll have a special guest, and you can find out who that is when you join us, and we hope that you will next Saturday. In our discussion with Afia Wangaza, we're going to be talking about her survival as a victim of COINTELPRO and what that was all about. Her radio project, Low Power Radio Project in Greenville, South Carolina. We're going to also be talking about her, talking with her about black women in the civil rights movement, specifically her experience as a very active member of SNCC. And we're also going to be especially focusing on her viewpoints and insights about the absence of rebellion in our community and what we can do to create or continue to empower an environment in our community of resistance. This is Our Common Ground. I'm Janice Graham. And our guest tonight, Afia Wangaza. At the age of 13, she served as secretary of the Norfolk, Virginia branch of the NAACP Youth and College Chapter, and later in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. She fought police violence, worked in the successful NAACP-led campaign to desegregate Girard College, a school for poor white male orphans, which sat in the heart of the black community at Philadelphia. And she and her family helped raise money and collect clothes and food to send to the South for those who were evicted and persecuted for attempting and registering to vote. Her life really speaks to the idea that when you begin to, when you grow up understanding the history, understanding the challenges before your people, you learn to love your people and to take on the obligations and responsibilities inherent in that love. She joined forces with, as a SNCC volunteer, to found the Northern Student Movement Freedom Library Day School, which was featured in the Xerox-sponsored Black History Lost, Stolen, or Strayed series. And armed with a Bachelor's of Arts degree and in Psychology and Visual Arts from Spelman College, she entered into Temple University's first Master of Arts degree in women's history, African-American history, and Golden Gate University School of Law. Then she went to Greenville, South Carolina, where she is known as a freedom fighter, a legal president setter, and the recipient of many awards. She is the former co-chair of the Jericho Movement for U.S. political prisoners, represented the U.S. Human Rights Network's political prisoner working group in observing the U.S. first appearance for U.N. Universal Periodic Review in Geneva, and she joined us here at Our Common Ground as she came back from Geneva during that time. She represented the National Conference of Black Lawyers in Aristide-era Haiti, lectured at the UN Fourth World Conference on Women, the NGO Forum in Beijing, China, and helped draft the action plan for the UN World Conference Against Racism. She is an Amnesty International U.S. human rights defender and past member of the National Board of Directors for National Organization of Women, which launched the Every Woman Now campaign for president. She was also a candidate for the U.S. Senate from South Carolina under the Green Party banner. She is a member and founder of the Malcolm X Center for Self-Determination, and we are just honored to be able to say that she is an Our Common Ground voice. And we'll be hearing from her, and she'll be joining us in right after this.
My name is Ifsia Wangaza. I am the national co-chair of the Political Prisoners State Repression Working Group of the United States Human Rights Network. The U.S. Human Rights Network is a national coalition of more than 200 organizations, ranging from the traditional human rights organizations like Amnesty International, various academic and professional associations, to volunteer grassroots community-based human rights organizations like my own, which is the Malcolm X Center for Self-Determination. I'm a former colleague of Imam Jamil Al-Amin. We both work together in SNCC, Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. I am a survivor of the COINTELPRO era, and it is a great honor, thank you, to participate in today's event. I am especially, I want to join the call that was made initially regarding COINTELPRO survivors, people who have been interned in concentration camps across this country for more than 40 years, former Black Panther Party members, Black Liberation Army members. We have, as a part of our work, a campaign called Free Our Mandelas. It's important that we understand, really understand the saying, he or she who defines the terms is the master. And that includes the concept of innocence and guilt, as well as the concept of terrorism and patriot. It's important that we have our own definitions and we have our own heroes and sheroes who embody those principles. As an aside, Imam, I did not vote for Barack Obama. I voted for Cynthia McKinney. We have endless examples of white power imperialism in blackface all over Africa. It's all over the United States in various forms under various banners. We cannot allow ourselves to be deceived by chameleon Trojan horses who present themselves in the interest of the people. More to the point, I expand the call for, that I believe it was Waii, the Committee in Defense of the Bill of Rights Defense Committee. And I would say in challenging you to recognize that the U.S. Constitution, contrary to the representation, is not a human rights document. It is a commercial document. If you will read Howard Zinn's History of the United States, he has a whole chapter on how the U.S. Constitution came to be. And its ratification only occurred when the Bill of Rights was attached. So if you take away the Bill of Rights, which was required by We the People, and the so-called post-Civil War amendments, then you have what is really the guiding principle of the United States, which overrides those two bookends and form the foundation for their interpretation. I just want to recall your attention and invite you to join with us, U.S. Human Rights Network, in our international campaign to hold the United States accountable. Malcolm X challenged us to not only raise the civil rights movement in the United States to a human rights struggle, but also to bring the United States government before the United Nations, and at that time it had some significance, but even more before the world. The U.S. Human Rights Network has worked diligently to promote a broad-based coalition network for the purposes of advancing human rights in the United States by building a people-centered movement, calling on the United States in international forums to live up to the propaganda, the PR, that it presents to the rest of the world. And in doing that, we were most recently able to challenge the United States in what is called the Universal Periodic Review Process, which is a peer, country-to-country review process, out of which more than 225 criticisms, or recommendations as they are called, were made against the United States, coming from both friend and foe. They covered all of the issues that have been raised here today, from the lack of access to adequate food, clothing, shelter, to the CMUs, to the preemptive prosecutions, to solitary confinement as torture. We are currently in the process of doing what is called shadow reporting, and that is that as civil society, evaluating the United States' compliance with what is called CERD, the Convention for the Elimination of Racial Discrimination. We need you to join with the committee to defend
Bill of Rights Defense Committee.
Bill of Rights Defense Committee.
And the National Coalition to Protect Civil Freedom.
And to join with us at the U.S. Human Rights Network, making available to us that information so that our evaluation is even more accurate than we can possibly be just by ourselves. We look to grassroots efforts for the kind of authenticity that generated that 228 criticisms of the United States of America. We also challenge you to join with us in the effort that we will be a series of activities, what are called side events, that will be held in New York September 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st, around Durban 10, where the United States has decided that under the Obama administration that it will follow the Bush and Clinton and prior administration's refusal to join into a dialogue to talk about white supremacy in the United States, indeed in the world. We also invite you to join us in the documentation of the United States' violation of its treaty obligation with regard to what is called CAT. That's the Convention Against Torture. The United States cannot be allowed to simply say, we do not torture, and that be the last word. We must stand up for people like the Angola Three, who have spent 30 and 40 years in isolation in Angola prison, Michelle McGee in California. We must support the hunger strikers in Lucasville as well as the hunger strikers at Pelican Bay and in Georgia. We have a lot of work to do, and if each one of us, as Gandhi said, would just do the little thing that we think is least significant, then together we can turn this elephant around. Thank you.
Afia Wangaza, thank you so very much, sister, for being with us again.
My pleasure.
We
got
to turn this elephant around. How are you?
Hanging in there. How about you?
I'm still hanging in here.
Listen, yeah, that's true. You have definitely kept this role open, and it's I congratulate you on it because it's year in and year out, and you never know what the impact, if any, there is. But just knowing that you're there is very affirming and inspiring.
Well, thank you. We'll try to keep it. This is our 28th year.
Wow.
And we're going to try to keep this thing afloat as best we can. But one of the things that you pointed out in your presentation, and we played the clip, because I thought it was very important for people to know that in the struggle and in all of the work that you have been doing in regard to human rights and the need to press the issue of white supremacy and racism in this country as an international issue, that we're not getting our people engaged in that, and we need to keep making that clarion call.
Absolutely.
Let's start off tonight by talking about what has been some of the outcome of the work that you did with the UN, with the Periodic Review and the UN.
Well, the first thing is, of course, just to remind those who are longtime listeners and inform new listeners, is that we were first and foremost able to have the category of political prisoners included in the official record of the UN Committee on Human Rights. And while the characterization was a restatement of our report, the fact of the matter is that the Secretariat often will change the language that is submitted by NGOs or governments, for that matter, in making its report. So it was a deliberate decision to use our language as opposed to coming up with some summary language of its own. So that's a first. Secondly, in our consultations, as they're called, with the U.S. government and its various representatives, at no time did they deny the existence of political prisoners, prisoners of war, and political exiles in the United States or and from the United States, which, again, is an exception. Third, the head of the delegation, Michael Posner, requested a list of the names of the persons that we characterize as political prisoners, which, taking us back to number one, is an affirmation as of the existence of political prisoners, or at least a category of people in the United States that are considered political prisoners by the community and non-governmental organizations, whether the United States government considers them to be political prisoners or not. And fourth is, of course, to be able to have gotten five of the 228 recommendations or criticisms of the United States to focus specifically on the issue of political prisoners and calling for the release of political prisoners. We have been able to use those advancements as platform to raise other questions regarding political prisoners in the process in which we're currently involved, which is the review for the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, ICCPR. We were to go to Geneva back in October to observe and lobby the Human Rights Committee as it we would observe its review, the committee's review of the United States' compliance with that treaty, having already lobbied them in March of 2013, then we would have gone back in October for the actual review itself. We believe that we are going to have a very favorable treatment of the issue of political prisoners, which we discussed around the issue of solitary confinement. Any given day in the United States, as many as 80,000 people are being held in solitary confinement and for extended periods of time, as my recorded comments reference. The Angola 3 represents one example of that, and of course Herman Wallace was held in solitary confinement for almost 42 years. His conviction was overturned 3 days before he died. However, he was, when he died, he was outside of the Angola prison walls and was relieved and elated and victorious to be having successfully fought the trumped-up conviction under which he was held, which was the killing of a prison guard, although there was no evidence that he had any involvement in the death of the prison guard. And in fact, the prison guard's wife had since come to the conclusion that he nor any of the other Angola 3 were involved in the death of her husband and had joined the call for their release. But Herman died a free man. He was literally and figuratively free. He was heroic. He fought a lifelong battle, not only for himself but for others, against human rights violations that he observed, despite his own personal situation, and that being, as I said, being held in solitary confinement. The majority of political prisoners, COINTELPRO, civil rights era political prisoners, prisoners of war, and exiles are subjected to long periods of isolation, and technical term under which they are referenced in the upcoming report. With the ICCPR, they have what's called a list of issues as compared with the recommendations of the UPR, Universal Periodic Review. So the political prisoners are covered under what they call prolonged cellular isolation. They have all these different technical softening diplomatic terms for all these very brutal practices, but that's the clause that we proceed under with regard to the U.S. Compliance with its International Covenant for Civil and Political Rights review, which was postponed in October due to the so-called government shutdown and rescheduled for March. We noted to both the U.S. State Department and to the Human Rights Committee that despite the government shutdown, the Secretary of State, John Kerry, had no problems with going to the Pacific Rim to negotiate the Pacific Pact, you know, TPP, the super NAFTA-type free trade agreement that overrides the sovereignty of countries and ensures the security of corporations. At any rate, the review was postponed from October to March, and we will go to Geneva in March. We're very hopeful that we will prevail in March, because one of the members of the committee is a South African woman who helped to frame the question. And as she framed it, it made it crystal clear. It was one of the, she framed it in such a way that it was both a question and an instruction. And in, simply put, it was, why does the United States continue to criminalize and incarcerate these political activists, number one? And number two, has the United States, and if it has not, will it use its executive authority to formulate a Truth and Reconciliation Commission to address this period in its history in order to bring it to closure? We expect her to raise that at the time of the review, which for our purposes puts it on the official record. And once it's a part of the official record, then it becomes a question that the United States has to address every time it comes up for review. So we have been able to build from the UPR successes to using that as a platform to extend the and strengthen the record of the existence of political prisoners in the United States.
You know, since the death of Nelson Mandela, and there has been such extolling about his strategy of reconciliation and looking at the truth and justice panels that were held in regard to South African apartheid systems. I have been wondering if the human rights activists across this country ought to be using that as leverage in organizing and demanding a truth and conciliation court in this country, not only in regard to political prisoners, you know, and we tend to look at political prisoners as people who, you know, like Leonard Pelletier, the Angola Nine, but we're not looking at some of the more recent cases over the last decade where people are essentially political prisoners. We haven't addressed the issue about why Assata Shakur would be placed on the 10 most wanted lists of the FBI in the number one spot. And I am really hoping that I'm not hopeful, but I am hoping that John Kerry might be forced into a corner by the question that's going to be raised in March.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is our hope. We have, in fact, when we did the lobbying of the committee back in March, we raised the fact that the bounty had been doubled on Asada's head, which not only put her at risk, but also was violative of the laws of political asylum and refugee status, and disrespectful of the sovereignty of the people of Cuba. So we found that there were, in fact, there were a number of South American diplomats on the task force, and they were equally offended by the doubling of the bounty as it affects Cuba, and what it says about the United States' attitude towards Cuba, which all the world votes against the United States on its behavior towards Cuba every year. In addition, of course, they also have great sympathy for the Cuban Five and the fact that the United States persists in holding them after having wrongfully convicted them. So it's not, as much as the United States parades and presents itself, even Obama at Mandela's memorial, the arrogance with which they treat the rest of the world has come to resent it and is less, increasingly less willing to be silent about it. It's not, most countries are not in a position to take any direct action against the United States other than the symbolic act of Dilma Rousseff refusing to come to the United States and appear at a state dinner once it was disclosed that the United States had been spying on not just Brazil, but on her specifically. So it's a very interesting, though chaotic, it feels chaotic, time in the history of humanity and human affairs, regardless of where you're looking. I mean, whether you're talking about what's going on in this country or you're talking about what's going on in the world, it's a real maelstrom of energies that are not synergizing in a very productive kind of way. So in terms of where we are with international law, strategic moves in that regard, we are continuing to move forward, but I have to go back to the point that you raised of the necessity of community engagement. We have really got to work harder at public education and at greater community participation. Last weekend was the 10th anniversary of the U.S. Human Rights Network, and so it's probably one of the biggest conferences that it's had in that 10-year period, with a great deal of diversity of class, level of development, race, gender, age. It was an amazingly diverse group of people. activists. One really impressive group was a group of 14 young people from Chicago who lead the anti-eviction, anti-foreclosure eviction movement in Chicago. And it was a response to the height of the evictions. One of the outcomes was, you might remember, the sheriff in Cook County who refused to perform any more evictions because people were being put out of their homes and out of their apartments, where they had paid their rent, but the landlord hadn't paid the mortgage. And a part of the leadership in that campaign, which resulted in that decision by the sheriff's department, was a young brother whose name was J.R. Forgotten his last name. That quick went right out of my head. But young people who just said, who stood between the persons and families that were about to be evicted and the cops and just said, we're not moving, we're not leaving, we're here to defend these people because housing is a human right. We have to do more education of the community and a willingness, generate that willingness to take that risk. It's a difficult time and situation because one of the things that the government has been able to do is to co-opt the programs that we use to organize people and to do consciousness raising previously. For instance, one of the first things that the government through the police would do, law enforcement would do when they went into break up a project, whether it was for the Black Panther Party or SNCC or other organizations that were grassroots organizations that were on the ground, would be to destroy the service sector. You know, the first confrontation wasn't shooting up of the office. It was declaring that cooking grits and eggs for kids in the morning was a violation of the health codes.
Yeah. And they're doing that against the war against homeless people in urban centers now.
That's right. That's exactly right. So what we have to do is we have to be ready to say we're going to feed homeless people whether you give us a permit or not, mm-hmm. and be prepared to go to jail for that. We have got to make it ungovernable, and that has got to be the bottom line across the board. We've got to stand up for the principles of human dignity and worth and be prepared to pay the price for that. Unfortunately, too many of us have become vested or expect to become vested in this system, and therefore we find ourselves doing a lot of what I call hedging. We've got one foot in the revolution and the other foot in the status quo. So whichever way it feels like is going to win, we want to be in the position to benefit, but not in a position to advance the cause.
To summarize what you said, we're at one hand, we're shouting power to the people, and at the other hand, we're touting the U.S. Constitution.
Exactly.
On one hand, we are complaining about the evolution of anti-human rights in this country, and on the other hand, we are voting for people who do not have a platform of human rights.
That's right. and not interested in advancing human rights.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, you bring up two things for me, and one of them is whether or not our traditional black colleges and universities, historical colleges and universities, are training our young people. You know, I look at your background growing up in a Garveyite home, and really beginning to understand the system of white supremacy at a very early age. And I'm wondering if any of our colleges, our universities and colleges, are training diplomats to be able to go, legal minds and diplomats to be able to go and do this work through the UN and through organizations like your committee.
I don't think so. And the reason that I say that, the closest that we would have, I think, would probably be Howard University Law School.
Mm-hmm.
And all of our schools have come to education for the purposes of employment as opposed to racial uplift. You and I are old enough to remember when we went to school to advance the interests of the people. We didn't go to school to get a job. Today, young people, and it's reinforced by the debt servitude that students come out of school with. But today, the student who is not talking about getting a job in that application, in that statement of goals that goes along with their college application, they're not even really considered. Wherein the person who was talking about getting a job in our time, it was like, well, this is a liberal arts college. We want you to have broad vision and bringing a broad experience and curiosity. They don't want any of that. And anybody who's talking like that is not getting into school. Not only that, if they're not talking like that and they are talking about changing the world, they're not getting into school. So it's a whole another kind of restructuring of the society for the long term that we don't even recognize. And as I said, it's being reinforced by the level of debt that students come out of school with. I've been saying to young people, why are you so uptight about paying off a student loan? There are no debtors' prisons in this country, certainly not yet. So the only thing that they can do is get a judgment against you. And if you're not committed to becoming a part of the status quo, then it doesn't really matter because you'll be judgment-proof because you won't own anything. So, and they certainly can't take your education out of your head.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, the cops could beat you up and that kind of cause brain injury and that kind of thing. I mean, there's too many of them for them to be able to get away with doing that on as a strategy for recouping. So, again, people have got to decide what is important. And be prepared to stand your ground, to coin a phrase, right, about what the principle is. You know, it can't be about just reducing the interest rate. It can't even be about changing the law to allow for the filing of bankruptcy, which at this point in time is not permitted. It's got to be that education is a human right, and indeed it is a human right, and therefore it has to be respected, and the government has a duty to formulate economic and political policies that underwrite that human right as opposed to thwarting it. And that's really where we have to move people to that point, where people are saying and understanding and internalizing the fact that education is a human right. Access to food, clothing, shelter, clean air, clean water, technology, health care. I don't mean health insurance. I mean health care. Education are all human rights. And, in fact, it's what the United States goes around the world ramming down the throats of the rest of the people on the planet and denying it to the people in this country, using the money of the people in this country to buy off other people with this same notion of human rights.
And you know, the thing is, for our listeners, we have to begin to connect these dots as we consider issues having to do with unemployment, as we consider, I mean, there should be proposals all over this country which says that when you are unemployed and you can't get a job after 6 weeks and your unemployment expires, your benefits expire, you should be getting a check from the government.
Absolutely.
There are contractors in the Department of Defense, in the Department of Labor. There are government contractors. When they don't have any work for them, they still get a check. And that is one of the things that we really need to consider as we think about public policy.
Exactly.
Now, Afia, one of the things, too, I want that came up as you were talking for me is the idea of, I mean, people do, they in the corner of their minds, they understand that we are increasingly becoming a military-driven society. All you have to do is go down to your local police department and look at the kind of vehicles and the kind of armament that they have geared up to so-called serve and defend.
Right.
But one of the things that we are not doing is we are not thinking that we can connect the kind of work that you do, the kind of work that's happening with the working group with the UN, to our local communities. As the state, as states' rights becomes more real in our lives, we could have truth and justice review boards in our communities.
Right.
We can start there. Go ahead.
And that's exactly what we should be doing. Part of the problem, well, first of all, let me say, as a matter of fact, under the U.S. Constitution, the treaties which the U.S. has signed and the Senate has ratified has, at a minimum, the same standing as U.S. law. In fact, it, in some instances, is superior to U.S. law. However, the United States, in its arrogance, whenever it ratifies a treaty, it has what it calls RUDs, reservations, understandings. And I always forget what that D stands for. It'll come to me. But the fact of the matter is that it takes the position, this is what's called, and you've heard it a couple times recently about the United States as an exceptional country. And it's this exceptionalism is supposed to be that it already in the Constitution and in its practices carries forward the principles of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and of these various treaties. It's reservations, understandings, and declarations. That's what the D stands for, which are all excuses for not complying with the terms of the treaties, for which it has become so embarrassed that then it signs on to. So we have to, one, as lawyers, begin to use the international standards in our litigation. Secondly, is to educate and to get legislators, whether it's city council, county council, state legislators, to incorporate human rights standards in the legislation that they submit. In fact, I earlier this evening was having dinner with a sister who is a state representative, state representative, state house of state of South Carolina House of Representatives, who I'm going to work with to submit bills that raise the standards of treatment for incarcerated persons. There's a whole body of international law around that in which the United States is out of compliance. And so she has an opportunity to submit legislation that would bring the United States in compliance as to the state of South Carolina. So that's one, a second part. The third part is educating the average person, you know, like the same as we spent all those years educating everybody that you have a right to vote. You have a constitutional right to vote. Without poll tax, without literacy exams, although they're reinstating all of those things, and people reaching a level of indignity to the point that they were willing to march, they were willing to confront the system and those who would advance the system that assaulted our dignity and worth as human beings. We've got to reconstruct that sense of outrage. We were really deliberately and effectively militarily attacked by the U.S. government, and we're still under attack. It's not as open frontal attack as we had during the 60s and 70s and the 80s, and certainly not with COINTELPRO, although I say that, but I'm not entirely convinced of that, as we find out, thank God for Edward Snowden, more and more about how the United States government has not only infiltrated organizations, but is reading our mail and listening to our phone calls. And, I don't care what they say about it. It's metadata and they can this and that. We know that they are, in fact, reading everybody's mail, and that any effort to organize to resist is just a matter of a computer program, a computer to unscramble the email of the people involved in the effort, and they have their whole case together. They know exactly what we're doing. So, how do we begin to deal with that in another way? And we've got to come to the point where we're willing. There are enough of us who are willing to take the risk to make enough of a stink that it pricks the conscience of other people and embarrasses, because that's all that we've got is shaming, as it's called, shaming and naming, the U.S. government, so that it undermines the credibility and the agenda that it's attempting to advance at home and abroad.
Well, we have to, you know, we have to raise the issue of this false and hypocritical fidelity that we profess mm-hmm. to the rights of man and the proclamation that all men are created equal in this U.S. kind of hypocrisy, moral myopia that would explain how President Obama can justify Israeli colonial brutality in the Palestinian mm-hmm. occupied territories in Gaza and ignore the slaughter at the hand of Egyptian security forces mm-hmm. while arguing at the same time passionately for waging humanitarian war on Syria.
Exactly.
I mean, we've got to look at our own history on mm-hmm. on these matters that, you know, even if we go back to look at some of this stuff, we've got to look at Thomas Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if we go even go back that far, could speak of fundamentally equality while holding slaves and raping black women.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. Justifying kidnapping and assassination. And one of the reasons that I was so pleased to have you come join us is because December 10th, we celebrated International Human Rights Day. And
right.
all these people are coming out and talking about how important and
mm-hmm.
how exceptional we are as a country in the matter of human rights, and I don't know what they're talking about.
And you know what, Jay? Neither do they. It's a, as far as they're concerned, it's a slogan to be bandied about and used as a weapon against those whom they would chasten. For instance, Bill Clinton crying big crocodile tears for Mandela when Clinton served two terms and had 8 years to remove Mandela
from
the terrorists and never did.
And never did. And
never.
I'll give you a more, even more recent look at this issue is that how can this president talk
mm-hmm.
about human rights
mm-hmm.
while at the same time he is turning his back
mm-hmm.
on the predominantly black retired public sector workers in Detroit.
Thank you.
Human right to social security
mm-hmm.
in their old age in the form of pensions
mm-hmm.
that they earned and health care is unprotected while the city is being looted by private
yeah.
banks and bondholders.
Yeah. It's, I mean, well, you know, my position on Barack Obama, I knew would be at a minimum a disappointment, but that boy has turned out to be a disgrace. It will take us 500 years to overcome the damage that he has done to our reputation as a people. Africans in this country, the descendants of formerly enslaved Africans in North America were recognized the world over as the moral force in the United States. He has just totally, totally destroyed that. I want to also, two things. One is with regard to him, the whole, he's another one crying crocodile tears for Nelson Mandela, who was the co-founder of the military wing of the ANC, a bomb maker who was blowing up stuff all over South Africa. And he goes, Obama goes and turns Mandela's cell into a photo op. But he's got 50 people whose fate is in his hands from the civil rights era who never even, who wanted to, but never achieved the level of the use of force that Mandela achieved, and he won't grant him clemency?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's just...
Yeah, we've got to talk about human rights in the era of this administration and what you project going forward is going to happen. But, you know, the bottom line for me, Afia, is always all politics are local.
Right, right, yeah.
If you take control of what's happening in your school board, if you take control of what's happening with your police department, if you take control, call names, blame, and shame politicians who got in by the skin of their teeth and do nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have one politician here in Boston. I have known him since the almost the week I came to Boston in 1966.
Mm.
I call him every week and ask the question. The people in his office laugh. It's me. What have you done for me this week? Because
yes,
if we don't
exactly.
begin to do this, I mean, Detroit is a model.
That's right.
For the neocon, for the big bank.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, why is Bank of America still standing? That's what I want to know.
That's what I want to know. I want to know. You know, while you're on Detroit, I want to expand on the point that you made about the pensioners getting robbed. When the CEOs of all of these banks and GM and all those they got their bonuses. These people who are working class folk can't even get at the pension benefits for which they were contracted and paid into for.
Absolutely.
That was the rationale that was given as to why the CEOs and the stockbrokers and all should get their bonuses and their pension because they had a contract. But the thing that amazes me is that not one bank has been blown up, not one banker has been shot. That is what amazes me, and I can only think that people are just so traumatized.
Well, you know, we're spending so much time furiously barking at the evil, racist, obstructionist Republicans, but we are ignoring the Democrats who enforce our austerity on the poor, and President Barack Obama has carried on the proud Democratic Party tradition of campaigning to the left but governing from the right. Afia, I got to take a break. We got some messages for you. Thank you all for being with us here tonight. Our guest is human rights, civil rights, Black liberation warrior Afia Nwangaza, right out of Greenville, South Carolina. We're going to be talking more about human rights in the era of Obama, and also we're going to be talking more about Detroit and the workers of Detroit and what it all means for you. Thank you for being with us. This is Our Common Ground. I'm Janice Graham, and I'll be listening for you.
Our Common Ground. Blog Talk Radio. I'm Janice Graham.
with an exclamation point.
Can we talk? I mean, can we really break it down? Conversation is one of the most powerful tools we have. We do a lot of talking, but we got to transition that talk into a walk that's going to benefit us. I want to navigate this system that we live in, but in order to navigate it, we have to understand it. So join me for my new show. You're going to get a chance to learn a little bit more about me, what I'm passionate about, what I believe in. I want to help you expand your perspective on things. I want to elevate your thinking. So join me. Outside the Matrix. Reasoned resistance.
Outside the Matrix.
Blanche. Blanche premieres on TruthWorks Network December 30th. Join Blanche with an exclamation point.
Can you say why America is the greatest country in the world?
Diversity and opportunity.
Lewis?
Freedom and freedom. So let's keep it that way.
Well, why is America
not the greatest country in the world, Professor? That's my answer.
Thank you.
You're saying...
Yes.
Let's talk about...
Fine. Sharon, the NEA is a loser. Yeah, it accounts for a penny out of our paycheck, but he gets to hit you with it any time he wants. It doesn't cost money. It costs votes. It costs airtime and column inches. You know why people don't like liberals? Because they lose. If liberals are so fucking smart, how come they lose so goddamn always?
Hey.
And with a straight face, you're going to tell students that America is so star-spangled awesome that we're the only ones in the world who have freedom? Canada has freedom. Japan has freedom. The UK, France, Italy, Germany, Spain, Australia, Belgium has freedom. So 207 sovereign states in the world, like 180 of them have freedom.
All right.
And yeah, you, sorority girl, just in case you accidentally wander into a voting booth one day, there's some things you should know. And one of them is there is absolutely no evidence to support the statement that we're the greatest country in the world. We're 7th in literacy, 27th in math, 22nd in science, 49th in life expectancy, 178th in infant mortality, 3rd in median household income, number 4 in labor force, and number 4 in exports. We lead the world in only 3 categories. Number of incarcerated citizens per capita, number of adults who believe angels are real, and defense spending, where we spend more than the next 26 countries combined, 25 of whom are allies. Now, none of this is the fault of a 20-year-old college student, but you nonetheless are, without a doubt, a member of the worst period, generation, period, ever, period. So when you ask what makes us the greatest country in the world, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about.
I'll ask you. Check out. But check out, shut up. Because if those are your two choices, Barack Obama, President Barack Obama, and this bigot, this racist, then I don't see that there's a big issue there. I don't see that there's anything, any other choice. You either stay home and stay disengaged, but then I don't see how you would have a voice. I don't see how you would be able to complain. I just read off 13 things that this president has given or has added and has done for the black community. I don't know if I'll be able to help. For those who say he hasn't, you know, you need to be aware of these things. 914-338-1610. Let me go to 972.
The Alpha Show, Fridays, 10 p.m., TruthWorks Network, advanced, urban, progressive, political talk. When injustice becomes law, resistance becomes duty.
The Alpha Show, only on TruthWorks Network.
There's nothing to say, nothing to do, I'm nothing to give, I must live without you.
To the right, and
the right-wing extremists have now become mainstream and in many ways provides a litmus test for what some think are cultural and moral integrity in the country at this time. The whole country has drifted to the right. If you don't believe it, anybody who actually thinks or calls President Barack Obama a liberal is insane. Barack Obama is a moderate, a center-right, right-wing Democrat. When you look at his approach.
The most powerful force on the earth, a soul of fire. The soul of fire. Spirits matter.
Spirit matter. This is Soul of Fire.
TruthWorks Network, Wednesday, 10 p.m.
Hi, this is Janice Graham, thanking you for being with us here tonight at Our Common Ground, asking you to support the Black Report Agenda. Get a subscription. Stop by blackagendareport.com. Our friends Glenn Ford and Bruce Dixon are listening for you. Support the news that you can use. The Black Agenda Report. Join us here at Our Common Ground in our effort to keep them to support what they do. Support all independent media. I'm Janice Graham, speaking truth to power and ourselves.
Someone asking for the truth. I know the truth. I know enough. At any minute, any second now, so will the rest of planet Earth. So what I'm asking you is, what is your end game?
This is Our Common Ground. Broadcasting bold, brave, and black.
Thank you for being with us here tonight. Our guest, Afia Gwangaza. I just want to do that in sometimes, Afia. I really do. Listen, before we went to break, before we continue our discussion, I do have a shout-out tonight for my niece, Tanya, and her husband, Dwayne Reed, who are celebrating their 15th year of marriage. Mm-hmm. And I want them to know that we know that marriage is very, very hard sometimes.
Yeah.
And it is very good sometimes. And when young people can endure, committed to both family and their marriage, and their children, and make it work, it lends and contributes to everyone in the family, and I want them to know, and I know that Dwayne is listening tonight. Tanya probably fell asleep, but I want you both to know that your love for each other and for your children, your wonderful children, lend love in our family, and I want to wish you the best for your future as a family. And we also want to shout out to M2, Mason Turner. My grandson turns 2 years old on Wednesday, and because of the big snowstorm coming through Boston right now, you probably heard my house rumbling. We had to have the birthday party this morning. Mother Nature makes you reorganize. So we want to say happy birthday and hope that his big sister who is listening will extend. He was very, very happy. He knows how to hold up two fingers and say two. And I got it. And so happy birthday to Mason, those of you who celebrated with me the birth of my third grandchild.
Mm-hmm.
And have been celebrating my grandchildren through this broadcast for many years. That first one is headed to, in 2014, early 2014, to her 21st year. And she is spending her winter vacation completing medical school admissions forms or applications. So we wish her well and thank her for being with us. Afia, we thank you also for being with us. Our number is 347-838-9852. If you'd like to get in on this conversation with one of the most prominent, successful, experienced activists that our country has produced. Afia, tell us. About, I want to talk about two things. Your insight about what is happening in Detroit and what it means for other cities, urban centers like Detroit. I mean, we have to realize that Detroit is Chocolate City,
right?
And they're moving Africans out of there as fast as they can.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. And what was the what's your second?
And the second question is essentially, how did this happen? How did we allow this to happen? I mean, a lot of people want to blame this on Kwame Kilpatrick.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Kwame Kilpatrick was the setup,
mm-hmm.
the beginning of the setup for this to happen. That doesn't mean he's not a criminal. It simply means he was the biggest pawn in
mm-hmm.
this con game.
Mm-hmm. The first thing that comes to my mind is it's the result of what I said earlier about our hedging. You know, we've got one foot in revolution and the other foot in the status quo, and so we were. Brought off in increasing numbers. The Du Bois Talented Tenth, those of us who were in the best position to access and take advantage of emerging, what we were led to believe were emerging benefits and opportunities in the society. You know, we stopped teaching school and started doing whatever else we started doing. So what happened to the kids in our community and the literacy levels and the ability to be able to function despite other dysfunctional areas in the community? So I think that's we have to assume responsibility for a part of the Detroits of the world. Because the truth of the matter is what's going on in Detroit is going on in varying degrees across the country with neo-colonialism. You know, you get white power surging in blackface in the same way that we see that very same phenomenon as symbolized or embodied by Barack Obama. So we have the combination of the outside assault, the stripping of voting rights, the denial of contract rights. I mean, it's just back to there are no rights that black people have that white people are bound to respect. And it's never changed. And that's one of the things that is always clear in my mind and makes me wonder what is up with us. Why do we believe the mythology that's woven around the commercial document called the U.S. Constitution and operate as if it is real? There has consistently been an agenda to deprive us of participation in the society we built. And we keep pretending that we're getting in, we've gotten in, we'll be in. And every time the clock makes its full cycle, when we get from, we're excluded, we're out of it. And Detroit, it isn't the beginning. See, you got to go back, I think, to at least Benton Harbor, where the people in Benton Harbor were stripped of their voting rights, and governor sent in somebody else to the Kevin Orr in that situation to sell off and dispose of the assets and leave the black community standing at bay with no resources with which to recover. So as we stand by and watch it happen to Detroit, of course it's going to be happening to Newark, it's going to be happening to, and is happening to Atlanta, is happening to D.C., and all of those cities have black mayors who are touting the party line that we've got to cut benefits and we've got to, instead of standing up for the people. For which was the reason that they got elected in the first place, was the hope, if not the belief, that they were in fact going to represent the interests of the people. Another part of the problem is the absence of independent media. There's no investigative reporting that's going on. There's no public education that's going on as represented by reporting the news, never mind investigative reporting. That we should let them put Kwame Kilpatrick in prison for twice the national average. The average amount of time for a corruption conviction is 14 to 16 years. That boy is going to jail for nearly 30 years. In fact, it may wind up when they finish with all the trials and. It may wind up being even more than that. Kwame Kilpatrick did not start that city on the downslide. That city has been failing since the rebellion of the 60s, when the whiteys decided they were not going to rebuild the city. They were going to take the jobs and run, and they let Detroit die. They decided they would let it die. They made that decision over 40 years ago. They implemented it, and now they are reaping the benefit of it. How dare that Negro, Kevin Orr, make the statement that you don't have to sell grandma's china in order to save the city, but he can raid the pension funds of workers. You see, people like that need to be dealt with in an upfront, in-your-face kind of way. How could he make such a statement as that? Now,
we have to, again, connect the dots. We have to see that as soon as Orr ensured, mm-hmm. as soon as the judge in this case is Stephen Rhodes, as soon as the Michigan State Constitution, which prohibited emergency financial management, and for those of you who are listening, you have to understand that bankruptcy for a city is very, very rare.
Mm-hmm.
So the bottom line here is that they moved the pawn. They put the pawn in place. They moved the pawn. They convicted the pawn. Mm-hmm. They waited to sentence him in the middle of the restructuring to ensure that Barclays Bank and UBS, the prime beneficiaries of interest rates in this case, would get their money. And when that money was, when that judgment came down in favor of the $350 million in favor of Britain's Barclays Bank in order to pay off Bank of America and UBS for 2005 derivatives deal with the city. Then they sentenced Patrick Kwame Kilpatrick. You know, and the thing is that we got to stop at some point and think, is it every time something bad happens with a black person, we go with what truth is being told in the Detroit Free Press? Because the Detroit Free Press was talking about doing investigative journalism around Kwame Kilpatrick instead of doing it around the bankruptcy.
Exactly.
So what happened here, folks, and you can say you heard it from me, the city is guilty of excessive blackness and must,
exactly.
And in a racist society, must be punished.
That's right. Dismantled. I will not be surprised if they sell off all of the art in the African American Museum and not touch a single solitary painting in the white folks' museum.
Well, they've already allowed the main branch of the City of Detroit Library to be ravished by rain and snow and not being and the books were just thrown away. And you know, city's black history is in that main library.
Yes, not only that, and that is not just the city's black history. That is international black history. That is black labor history, where blacks took their leadership on the advancement of workers' rights, from which everybody benefited.
That's right. And one of the things, you know, a historical note here is that the main migration from African American and black people moving out of the South into industrialized cities was Detroit. Detroit had the largest middle class black population in the country. And your tax dollars went into upholding the city of Detroit through federal loans to the major corporations in that community. I think we ought to be outraged. I think we ought to be cautious about what we understand about what is being told about this story. And what's going to end up, it is a corporate gentrification of the black community of Detroit. We're going to go to our phones. 312, you're on the air with Afia Wangaza. 312, thank you for your call.
Hey, Janice, this is House. Thanks for taking my call, and hello to your guest also.
How are you?
I respect you, House. Thank you for joining
us. You all are making some great points about Detroit and just connecting the dots, period. I mean, you can connect the dots throughout your whole conversation tonight. And I'm still wondering why, you know, nobody's calling a fascist a fascist. Because that's all this is. It's all it's ever been. It's all that happened in with Mandela, South Africa. It's all fascism. It's all the corporation buying the governments and flexing their muscles with the banks. And you're absolutely right. It's eradicating labor history, black history. It's taking all those financial gains that not just black folks, but lower class, middle class people were able to gather, and they're taking it back by any means necessary, stripping it, Same thing's happening in Illinois with the pension crisis here and the law they just signed to basically reduce people's pension statewide and from arrears and going forward. And there is a law in place, state law on the books, that says you cannot adjust pension holders or people getting pensions on the fly. And they want to do it to people who are already getting their pensions, who are already retired.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's happening in another arena, too, and that is with federal employees.
Absolutely. Federal employees. And you saw they did it with the post office. They're taking it back. They're taking it back, and this administration, all the way back to Clinton, talking to Democrats specifically,
You've got a crackling going on. But one of the points, you know, I like that you brought up the issue of taking it back. But didn't they tell you they're going to take it back?
Yeah, they told us we wasn't ever supposed to get it.
Did those people show up in front of the White House, in front of the Congressional House of Horrors? Didn't they tell you we're going to take our country back?
Yeah, well,
and what we did is we sat back as though we didn't understand that. It's the same way in which we can't seem to frame a vision of what justice looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's true. And they've had a plan for so long, you know, going all the way back to, the Birch, John Birch Society. Those are the same people who were funded, the libertarians of the day that took over the Republican Party via the Tea Party.
And we led them to destroy the largest network of black activism that existed in this country when we allowed the Tea Party and whoever those people are, I can't remember all those people's names, destroy ACORN.
Right. Yeah,
and the same people that funded them are in Michigan. The Voss family, I think it's 3 or 4 different billionaire families who funded a bunch of those same organizations.
Mm-hmm.
Not to mention in South Africa. They did the same thing through their corporations. I heard somebody say that the Citizens United law that was passed here was already in South Africa, but I mean that they are already corporations already established as people that had been established, and I heard they passed under Mandela.
Well, that was even before Mandela was released. That part of the system of apartheid had to do with allowing the government to develop an economic infrastructure that was private.
Right. And I also heard that they had, 5 different constitutions since 1910, I believe, the last being 1993. Everything. I'm sorry?
But what you see is that the South African Parliament use constitutional discourse to essentially do the same thing that the folks in our Congress, in the House, in any case, as a filibuster to other public policy.
Yeah.
And I want to go back to your point about corporations being people in the South African government. One of the things that happened to Nelson Mandela as he took on the presidency of the country is that he couldn't dismantle the economy and bring about the kind of equality that was needed to bring black South Africans out of poverty simply because the economy was corporations.
Right. He couldn't do a democratic socialist.
Right.
Yeah, he and the ANC got elected on the Freedom Charter, which promised to nationalize the resources, return the land to the people, or give them fair compensation, and to nationalize the resources in order to pay for it. And in one of his books, he talks about, and also there's another book that's come out recently, talking about the negotiations that went on, began while he was still in prison, where they moved him from Robbins Island to Polsmore, and they were having the negotiations of what, who was going to be what, where, when he got out, including the giving up of the nuclear weapons, which the Israelis had put in place for the apartheid government. And a part of that agreement, the agreements that were made during that time, was that he would not, or the ANC would not, nationalize the resources of the country, which is a major betrayal of the people. I mean, I've been to South Africa twice, and it's just, you know, they talk about it has the highest crime rate in the world and blah, blah, blah. But the fact of the matter is that very little has changed in South Africa except for the face of the government. And what that means is that the white folks are still in charge of the money, white folks are still in charge of the military.
Right. And they're taking their land back, too. There's a big move in South Africa
right
now,
right,
that whites who believe that some semblance of apartheid should be returned are moving into communities and essentially banning blacks from being anywhere near them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
you know.
I saw a story on that a few months ago. Yeah, they were setting up their own all-white enclaves again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And they maintain them anyway, even though they, very much like the United States, where you have one or two blacks in a white enclave, and they consider that desegregated. But for the most part, the blacks still live in shanty towns. You know, all the talk about Winnie Mandela, all the negative talk about Winnie Mandela and that god-awful Barack Obama had the audacity to pass by her and not acknowledge her, but had so much to say to Gretchen Michelle. You know, I mean, oof. But one of the big battles that she waged was against the privatization of water. And her refusal to pay the taxes on the water, to pay water bills, which came out to some phenomenal amount of money. I can't imagine how you wind up with a $40,000 water bill. But she refused to pay it and discouraged others from paying it.
That's right.
As a protest.
Yeah.
So,
hey, House, thank you for your call. We're going to have to prepare to get on out of here. But I'm always comforted when you get it. And let us know.
Thanks, Janice.
Yeah.
Okay. House music lover from Chicago. Afia, I do want to thank you so very much. And for those of you who are listening in our chat room, I have posted a couple of websites. There is Lessons from Afia Wangaza at axiomamnesia.com.
Mm-hmm.
And also WMXP955.webs.com, where you can learn more about what she's doing at the Malcolm X Center for Determination and the Voice of the People Reclaiming the Drum. WMXP LP 95.5 FM is where you can hear her. You're going to have to come back. We're going to have to make this 4 hours because I still have a list over here.
And you know, there was, you had, I wanted to say something about Alpo's thing about our choices of voting. You know, we can decide not to vote. Boycotting an election is an honorable tradition around the world.
That's right. Thank you so much for being with us, and we've got you on our list for early 2014.
Wonderful.
You got to come regularly. Thank you so very much.
Thank you.
And thank you guys for being with us at Our Common Ground. Don't forget next Saturday night, the annual Kwanzaa teach-in. We've been doing it for 28 years, and we hope that you will join us. Don't forget about I Declare, Saturday and Sunday brunch, 11 a.m., at Blog Talk Radio, and we hope that you will join her. This has been just a wonderful opportunity to have this discussion, and thank you for being with us. Let us hear from you at our OCGinfo@OurCommonGround.com, or visit our Facebook page. Join us on Twitter. All you have to do is Google Our Common Ground with Janice Graham. Good night, and I'm going to enjoy this snowstorm immensely.
Get us to the roof.
Thank you for being with us tonight at Our Common Ground. We hope that you'll join us each Saturday night, 10 p.m., speaking truth to power and ourselves. To contact us, email us at ocginfo@ourcommonground.com and visit our website, ourcommonground.com. Join us on Facebook and Twitter at Janice OCG, and I'll be listening for you.
We are living in a nation faced with the possibility of war on multiple mental and physical levels. We got black wars against the police. We still got crack wars in the streets. Unemployment at its peak. Overcrowded cells in present-day hell. Wars of Jews against Muslims over whether a created state is real. Wars over Western with Saddam. American politicians arguing over the difference between smart and dirty bombs instead of smart children in dirty schools. I feel like it's me against the world, and I'm starting to get ill without even thinking of Kim Jong, though North Korea does have the world turning up on its axis right now. With these signs of the time in mind, I wake up every day asking myself one question, and it takes me no less than 24 agonizing hours to answer. Am I gonna die today? I said, am I gonna die today? I don't even bother watching my back anymore because I might get killed from the side today. Or maybe they get me in nuclear with bombs dropping from the sky today. Or maybe some religious fanatic is gonna blow my behind up in a train station after deciding he wants to get closer to paradise today. Hell, I gotta wonder if some insane and depressed pilot whose wife has cheated on him and ran away with the kids is gonna fly today. Right into the 13th floor of my building where I just called my wife to tell her I gotta rise and pay. Or am I gonna get hit on some DWB while driving on I-95 today? Or maybe some crooked cop's gonna decide that some no good nigga's mom's gotta cry today? All this while wondering if Bush is gonna play chess if I lie today? Why today? Instead of thinking about all that today, I think I'm just gonna lose myself in the movement, the moment I own it, cause it might be time to go. It only takes one shot for cops to release my soul, cause our community's stalked by filthy 5-0 souls. So I decided that I'm gonna fight today, cause there's always just enough time left to be right today. See, I got kids looking up to me to take a stand against wars of Korea, Iraq, and Afghanistan today. So I gotta fight for the world to be safer, we. And this is also personal because I don't want my child to see my face next to the definition of complacency. I'm gonna fight this BS system with all of my might today. Because it's true that tomorrow will never die, but I might today. In a world where too many visionaries have become so hopeless that they're losing their sight today. And so many pedophiles and perverted priests out there that I gotta worry about whether my sons and daughters are gonna stay tight today. While Bush gives the rich tax cuts and the poor axe cuts on educational spending, my students are depending on me to do what's right today. Looking down at the end of the tunnel, I woke up seeing the light today. Cause get this, nations may blow up entire other nations out of spite today.
And though I got my cell phone on, I may not have enough time to call my mom to say goodbye today. Y'all may say I'm paranoid today, but inhaling historical truths has got me high today. So now I'm looking for heroines and heroes to help me stop my plight today. I'm even wondering if all the secondhand smoke finally gave me cancer today. So I called 911 for emergency assistance, but Bin Laden answered today. See, I just walk around thinking something's gonna get me. And I wonder why the hell you never ponder if you're coming with me. So you just got to forgive me because I'm just recounting some of the signs of the times that we live in. Because if ignorance is bliss, I know some of y'all forgot the hell we done been in. Got me wondering if God's really gonna be forgiven for all of our sinning. Like killing each other in the name of religion. I don't know about y'all, but I'm gonna fight and never give in. So if I die before I lay my head to sleep today, I just pray to God my soul to keep today.
ਦੱਸ ਖਾਤਰੀ ਓ ਵਿਸ਼ਨਿਆਂ ਨੂੰ